Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, we will take comments from the public regarding matters that are not on the agenda. Are within the purview of the Bill of Treasurer. Comments will be 2 minutes per person. Please come up and identify yourself and who you live in before providing your comments.
My name is Al Hirsch. I'm concerned when we talk about concerned that we haven't been grappled enough with the disdemand. And I haven't been a read disclosure of what's going on in the entire corridor. As we know that people drive more, we create more greenhouse gases, which is important. 38% of the state greenhouse gases from driving. We need to reduce driving. That calls for 20% reduced driving when taking the right here. You can't move in the wrong direction. The wider freeway will reduce more people to driving. That's established science, and too, there's no dispute about that. And I have heard a lot of discussion, that this is just a follow-up. Just fix this one last bottle and it'll be okay. This time will be different. On slide 4, you will see this Caltrans entire I-80 corridor plan. There's 60 bottleneck fixes in freeway widening on it. This report was issued in draft form in January of 2020. I just did a public records request to this agency. There's no interaction with the agency with Caltrans. There's not been a full disclosure of what's going on. So the I-80 corridor project should look at the context of the entire corridor. It's just what the study seems to indicate to me is this is going to remain the bottleneck of the corridor. We're not fixing the bottleneck of the corridor. There's still going to be overflow traffic on the region, on the side streets. And I think that maybe day one, if we make this an HOV, it will be congested. I think he said that, that's what I heard on St. Cloud last week on Thursday. So I'm quite concerned that we really haven't grappled with this demand, and this project will really not fix anything. Because this project is built, Caltrans is also focused on adding capacity to the freeway, not about fixing concrete traffic. So again, this affects time, this affects our greenhouse gases, this affects future world. This is really important. This is not something that we should be using with any of our
team. Time.
Thank you. We reject our greenhouse gas plan for the entire county.
For the record, I am want to clarify that the clerk has a copy of the material submitted.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The comments on items that are not on the agenda. Seeing that, we're going to close public comment items not on the agenda, and we're going to move to approval of the minutes. For the regular meeting on January 31, 2023. Do I have a motion or do I have questions?
So moved.
I have a motion and a second. I'm assuming no longer either roll call votes if we're in person.
I would still do a roll call vote just to be safe. What do you think?
Yeah.
If you're asking my opinion, I'd say if you actually think it might be a divided vote, then we should do roll call, otherwise probably not.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead with just point vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. That moves us on to administrative report by
Madam Chair, I'm happy to start with the Executive Director's report. A couple of items I wanted to flag. The last board meeting, the board did approve unanimously recommendations from the Citizens Advisory Committee around ways to strengthen the relationship and interaction between the CAC and the board based on multiple conversations that this body had last year. They included some recommendations from staff that also were discussed by the committee. Around creating stipends for CAC members, so that members who want to and would benefit from receiving those stipends in order to support the gift distribution are now eligible to receive those. Those will be the same stipends as the board received, which is meeting. We've been informed by our attorneys that in order, now, for whatever reason, the fact that they're stipend means that you all have to do some training in terms of Brown Act training and also, I think sexual harassment training and other kind of standard training that our board members have to do. So we're going to be following up with you and letting you know about that. But if you are interested in receiving those stipends, sure, you can be taking that option. Going forward.
I have a question. Will the CAC also be subject to the EEOC reporting? Is it currently in there?
That is a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But, you will find out. We'll have that for a list. Thank you. As well, to address issues around trying to increase diversity of the board of the committee, as we talked about, the board did also approve I two additional at-large seats. And encouraging staff to build a vacant at-large seat and to focus on making sure that our, to prioritize making sure the community is representative of some of the kind of demographics, transit-dependent populations, et cetera, when filling those seats. And Director Lauren and Curley formed an informal subcommittee to help prioritize kind of characteristics that we should be looking at. It's a very long list in the CAC bylaws. And so, anyway, so that is all going to be moving forward as well, and we'll appreciate your help and assistance in helping get the word out. People who might be, if you know of people who think you could candidate, who'd like to join the board, the committee, we'd love your input, and we'll follow up with more information on that as we get that process underway. Then two other quick things I just wanted to update. You know, you heard a comment about the Yellow Baby Project. As Mr. Rich mentioned, I've been doing a number of presentations lately to kind of spread the word about what's happening with the project. And all of that in advance of the fact that the environmental impact report is going to draft environmental impact report should be released in April. So we want to kind of we're trying to get ahead of that by getting out there and letting folks know about it. As well, we started working what we're calling our formal advanced planning process, which we brought to this committee. Last time, we're working with SACOG to get input from the other agencies in the SACOG region around tolling and around establishing a tolling authority that would oversee tolling here at Yolo 8 in Yolo County, but could also be expanded as other toll links come online in the SACOG region. So we'll continue to bring you updates around that. And then lastly, I wanted to share that we were approached by UC Davis recently to do a joint application with them to the Caltrans Sustainable Transportation Planning Grant Program around updating and updating their campus transportation master plan essentially, but with a focus on looking at the entire commute shed of people who are coming to the university and thinking about how they can improve transit for people that are coming from communities outside of Davis to the university. So we thought this was a real win-win to partner with them on that.
Appreciation to the board for approving that. I'm sorry I couldn't make that meeting, couldn't attend that meeting, but really appreciate that option and excited for the collaboration going forward.
Yeah, I'll just add that, said about those two at-large seats. We talked about with our priority for those seats, right? We wanted to look at student populations as well as, dependent populations. So we think maybe we should talk about options for how to recruit those. Yeah. Thank you.
we'll hear more from the board working committee.
Okay.
On that
also, kudos from me on setting the straight. I think it's going to help with, kind of easing the burden of participation, hopefully, for some of those at-large members. So that's wonderful. And I think that, and I can take this back to my council member, but I think finding options for transportation and mobility to these meetings for those at-large members could be the next thing that we attempt to tackle. I know that there's been some mention of special provisions made in the past get folks to participatory opportunities. So how are we doing that?
Yeah. And I'll just add my personal take as well. I think that's really going to be valuable for the board and for the agency. I also wanted to go back a little bit on your the environmental review stuff. And I'm assuming then that the public will get another eye to Apple, both at the CAC as well as at the board for concerns that they might have.
For the Yellow Reading Project?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So another opportunity for members of public who are seeking to address those and have their public formulated.
Absolutely. And I'll just add that, while Caltrans is the lead agency, there's people who have concepts, committed to making sure that we're involved in our own outreach to kind of amplify and expand on the outreach that Caltrans will be doing. So we're still working on what our plans are for that, but we expect some public hearing and getting out with this community to make sure people are aware of the project and help us participate in. We would love your input. As once you have a draft plan, you can get your feedback on part of the CCC. Thank you. I'm
looking more for CAC member reports.
Do
we have
the
reports?
A couple quick updates. My Davis Commission, so at BTSSC, Bicycle Transportation and Free Safety Commission, we have a meeting this Thursday at 5:30. That also will be our first in-person meeting in a long time, first since I've been on the commission. That'll be at the Davis Senior Center. And one item on the agenda is Fifth Street is looking at the Fifth Street redesign between L Street and Full Line Road. The 42 does run through there, so that's definitely an item of interest. And then also the Unit Grant Advisory Committee, which is I was on the BTSSC, I wasn't on it, but now I've been appointed as our alternate liaison to that. So a little complicated there, but the next meeting for them is April 27th at 4 p.m. And that I believe will be the meeting when they're discussing the annual Unit Grant service changes. So a chance to look at how their services are interacting with the 42 and other Yellow Bus services in Davis. That should be a good discussion.
April 8th is a birthday community fair in West Sacramento. I'm not sure if the transit is planning on being there. I don't know if I got the mailer, but I just wanted to flag it. It could be a great opportunity. And I also wanted to say, I guess, maybe for the record, or just no other reason, that with Jake cars leaving, if there's just another kind of burden placed on transit insecure folks, less options. So I just think of in West Sacramento, where a lot of weight has been put kind of on Via recently, and bike share and micro transit options. Just consider that, another thing that leads the region and Via is pretty much, I would say, pretty imperfect as a solution. So why don't you just flag that for consideration?
You said a name at the very beginning. I didn't catch the name.
I think I said, I meant gig cars.
Yeah.
Those cars have the on-demand cars. That's what.
The one-way.
Excuse me,
that would be correct, right? Yeah. So is there any other
criteria
in that?
For the noted fifth car still, which would be a similar, but not EVs. It's like a mixed fleet. And then I think there was one other one that doesn't have the reach that the fifth car does.
Yeah, I mean, there is just, there's none of these services equivalent. I think it's something that you can look into. I know that there's a pilot in San Joaquin County to provide nonprofit partnership with the San Joaquin County to provide fresh air to a rural community in San Joaquin Valley where there really is no demand. Where the providers aren't interested in going because it's a population. So they provided a number of cars. I think they have at least three cars. The cars just for that for one community. I think it's several others for another community. But they are EVs.
Oh, is that Neo car?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Neo car. And they're looking to expand it to Richmond, California. And I think there's another community that's considering expansion. So that could be an opportunity for what that is. The what's Neo car is developed a nonprofit. So and they're looking to help scale it.
So for this evening, considering this is reports and these are not agenda items, we'll just keep information only.
And Madam Chair, I realized I forgot one thing because I wanted to introduce some of our new staff there.
We'll get through our report and we'll do that.
Any other reports?
Not so much reports. I experienced being a website on the wall across the 350 ride going anywhere in town. In fact, and if that would be really helpful, I know, in the past, in the transit. And NOAA Bus has been talking about needs or gaps in the service, same day medical appointments is always a challenge. So something like you would be wonderful whenever and I just wanted to ask you to tell what you're going to do with Cool Day List on March 15th.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm going to be, I'm over our intern, we were just talking about that. I'm going to be presenting to Cool Day List on a variety of different topics, kind of like what are some of the ways that we're thinking about trying to reduce climate emissions for public transportation here in Miller County. So looking forward to that. Haven't put the slides together yet, but do you have any thoughts?
And unfortunately for her, I'll be introduced.
Because
I also am a board member for Cool Day List.
When is that again?
Did you end the day offhand? I have to look at my calendar. The 15th, maybe?
It's the 15th.
Possibly 4 o'clock or something like that.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, 4 o'clock went to the 15th. And then the bicycle home.
Yep, bicycle home.
Are there any other reports from the students? Seeing none, I think we'll circle back to new employees and then thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to introduce a couple of new folks who are sitting in the room. Starting with over here, Freddie Williams, our new Senior Transportation Planner. And in the back, we have Cassandra Barrientos, who's our new Assistant Transportation Planner. You all know Daisy Romero, who probably have a cheer in person. And then we have some of our wonderful interns, Mia and Miriam, are also here observing. Miriam is a Cool Day List member. We are so grateful. We are fully staffed for the first time since I started. And I know we were short staffed for a while before that, so it's great to have all these great courses and energy in the building.
So welcome. Now we expect great things.
Long range calendar?
Yeah, there is an updated long range calendar in your packet. I'll just say, action packs and subject to change, but as it's coming up in May, we'll be talking about the budget for the next year, which is also part of that. We'll talk about service changes that are coming for the next year, so stay tuned for that. You'll be hearing about that tonight, but then it'll be kind of just a point where we're finalizing it in May. And then we're finally getting moving on our YOLO Access Transportation Corridors program after FHWA was sitting on an agreement. All the things on that.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the fun workshop. Comment from the public? You need to come forward. Talk about this. If you don't bring it on the agenda, you can't talk about this on that. So
So it's really important that basically that you have a discussion when you want to work on the next meeting. And in that regard, I would urge you to basically review the website, review the public engagement parts of the website, which I think that they, because it's a new website, there's always improvements in different eyes and quite different. For example, there's no, if I want to mail emails to the entire board on a Friday evening, insist. 3 days until Heather came back to the town. There should be an email that goes directly to the, your commissions, for example. It would come to you right away, not waiting or you have to look over the weekend. There's a sitting around the board is the same way. Basically, if the agenda goes up on Friday, I have something to say Friday evening, and the board doesn't get until Monday morning, and only have 6 or 8 hours to look at. So another thing like that that can be improved is a little bit of public input, and I urge you to put the public engagement part of the website and you put the staff on that. So I think it'll be really helpful. Thank you very much. Put that on the I Bitter Channel discussion, a long-range calendar that we'll talk about. And everybody be fish for last item on the agenda. Thank you very much.
A large turnout on the surveys. We found a good amount of people working and using the bus at different times. That graph is in the presentation. But I think one of the things that we got most was some really great comments that we've received through both the travel survey and the 211-212 survey, which, you know, are listed here, you know, need earlier service for local routes. A lot of people talked about needing to be at work at 8, so the service that started at 8 really didn't work. We've heard a lot about people starting their job before 8 o'clock. There was a huge push to bring back the 210 and 214 services. There were some very informational things about how we could improve our website. And there was also a large amount of comments about the buses being late, safety and security at the transit center, and also a request for later evening services. All of that has gone into our planning for both microtransit service and for fixed route service, and we have a couple, we've started working on our proposed service change. So up first on the proposed service changes is, for microtransit service, we're basically looking at implementing microtransit as one single zone here in the city of Woodland. It would basically cover all of the city limits, including a couple of areas that are just outside the city's Woodland limits. The service hours, we would start with Monday through Thursday service hours, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Fridays would have a later evening service, starting at 7 a.m. and going to 11 p.m. Saturday and Sunday would have their own schedules too, with Saturday being a little later in the day, starting and running till later, with it being 9 a.m. and 11 p.m. And then Sunday would be a shorter day, going 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. A lot of this has been based off of input that we've received from the general public, along with some modeling that we've had done by our technology provider for microtransit, Rideco, who's providing our app. The really interesting thing is we're going to be operating this at times, during peak times, with as many as 4 vehicles and with as few as 2. So it really maximizes our ability to provide trips while also providing really excellent coverage of service. Next up is the beginning of our proposed Woodland fixed route service. Oh, oops.
If we have questions about the measures, excuse me. If I have questions about the major transit service, can I ask them now or wait?
There won't be much more. So on the proposed Woodland fixed route, we're really looking at getting back to having a bi-directional loop on our route. Currently, we have two routes that have a few places where they overlap, but they aren't bi-directional, which means that if you're riding to a certain place, for you to get back to your origin means that you have to ride the long way around. So you have to get on the bus, it may mean a 15-minute ride going to your destination, but it means a 45, 50-minute ride getting back to your origin. So that has really been the focus of our fixed route, along with the increase in the service hours to 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday, Saturday 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and then Sunday 8 a.m. to 7. All of those are extensions of our standard service, and it really came through in our surveys and our work with our stakeholders about the importance of having both earlier morning and later evening service. And I do believe that's the end of my presentation, so questions?
Thank you very much. So, committee members, if you want to hear the public input first, or have some preliminary questions. Do we have members of the public that want to speak on the item?
Because climate change is so really important, we should analyze the impact of the greenhouse gas to others. And also, I'm curious, you hear a lot about the transit falling off the physical cliff, and you heard a discussion earlier. I want to know that will affect this service, which is
to make comments? Seeing none.
Okay, I just wanted to ask about couple things about the trans as the microtransistor is a little bit. So you'll have definitely this question I could take offline too, but I'm just curious about if you're thinking about offering it will be an app, right? And so what are there accompanying services that allow people to call. Yeah, so that's an option.
Yes.
Yeah.
So our current fluid service that we operate in Ninth Landing and in Winners with our microtrans service. And a large amount of that is done through almost all of it is done through the phone.
Right.
As community decisions. And we figure a lot of that will continue. And so we will be using the same system that we're using now. With the same phone number and everything like that to provide the ability to make those calls via the phone.
Yeah, and the cost is the same as practice?
Right now, so just for this committee to know, the fare for microtransit service currently is $4. It's still up in the air on fares. We're figuring it will be probably a little more expensive than regular fixed route service. But we're trying to find a nice balance between fare and fare policy to make this service work for the community, but also not absolutely take from extra.
Yeah, so is there any consideration to provide discounts?
Yeah, we're looking at a variety of discounts. An idea about doing a youth discount, senior disabled discount, along with the maybe doing either 10-ride or multi-ride discount. A lot of that is still kind of being decided, but we always are looking for more input on that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what input. Okay, yeah. One last opportunity is to ask the sustainability committee to be able to help spread the word. And it seems like you actually really did get a good number of people in your survey. It really is good.
And I would tell you we also spoke in person with a large amount of people. The planning staff was really excited about getting out and making sure that we were connecting with people where they were at. We did a lot of cabling at grocery stores and places just so that we were in the community eye with getting as much feedback as possible.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Sure.
Can you say a little more about the safety of the transition?
I could probably say a whole lot about the safety of the transition, but I should probably keep my comments minimal. I think that with the transit center, it was originally built there because the mall was a major trip generator, which meant there was a large amount of people going in and out of the mall, which led to a lot of eyes being on the transit center and feet seeking, a variety of, for lack of a better word, criminal elements, safety concerns. And with the mall not being that same trip generator and then not being places people are going in and around our transit center, it has led to there not being as many eyes and there being concerns. And I completely understand that. I agree with that. It's one of the reasons for doing a study about at least possibly moving the transit center to somewhere like downtown Brooklyn, which we're really excited to be kicking off.
I heard that there's a new children's center opening in the mall. So maybe that should be something that's a consideration. Maybe you should reach out. Is there an extension of the children's center that's in West Sacramento?
Mm-hmm.
They're opening a satellite, another function office, play center in the mall. That's what I heard. And for at the time.
Sorry, did they go with the children's mall?
No, the museum of science and curiosity.
Oh.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about that. And we've been reaching out to a variety of different groups to find out, that the hard part is a lot of the easiest way of saying this is that God Shop is no longer open. So that's part of the mall. Like, there's been a school, Einstein, Loyola Education School was right there. And those things had so much activity that there were so many eyes on the transit center. So,
if I may, I would say, you know, I think we're pretty seriously, I think we're probably going to move forward with moving the transit center to downtown Woodland. It's going to take some time, it's going to take some planning. But we're still going to serve the town of Carroll. So it's not going to go away. It's just not going to be the place where everybody has to wait for every bus in and out of the city of Woodland. So I think, you know, we definitely heard from our board that they're very supportive of making that forward. So the devil's going to be felt. And, you know, we're now that we have Courtney on board, he's moving that scope of work forward, which we're very happy about. You know, at this point, I would say, we've heard so much feedback, and I'm sure anybody that they have here knows, it's just, for a lot of reasons, it's not just the safety issue, right? It's the fact that there is nothing accessible there, and there's no safe bicycle and pedestrian routes to most of the places you want to go from here. And it's the transfer point, it's the southernmost part of the town, so anyone going south to Davis, any other part of Woodland, has to transfer there. And so it's not ideal for a variety of reasons. I think, you know, but definitely want to make sure that if there are, you know, whatever happens there, we want to keep serving it, but there are still important needs there. Question. So appreciate all feedback on that.
Thank you for comments. I think it's Andrew and then Shakespeare.
Thank you. So a couple of questions. First, on the microtransit, it seems like it was just yesterday. I was on the evaluation committee doing the RFP for this. It's really exciting to see this moving ahead. The one question, I guess, is kind of the flip side of what Commissioner D'Agostino was asking earlier, is that so when the Woodland when the Woodland microtransit starts. Are the winners in the nice landing? So there will also be the option to book by phone. Will there also be the option to will there also be the option, like, will the app come online for winners in nice landing as well at that time? If the annual ride to a platform?
Yeah, we're really getting ready to implement a variety of different things across all our microtransit. So we'll be implementing the Woodland microtransit, but we'll be implementing the RideCo app across all of them. And we'll also be implementing probably a lot of the fare changes that we were talking about, just to provide the same kind of fare for all of them. A discount for students, a discount for seniors and disabled. All of that will actually go across all of our microtransit.
Sounds great. And then my other question is on fixed routes, so I can, I know it's probably beating a dead horse at this point, but I had to drive my bike up here and planning to take the bus back, but I'm not really looking that forward to biking to County Fair Mall and waiting to get on the bus there. But so with that in mind, I'm curious, one, so I know, like, one issue with the 42, and I think specifically, like, the 42B, is it, like, even coming through Woodland, was it leaves or is it going to County Fair Mall? Like, it goes down Matmore and then across and then it skirts that city center area. So I'm curious as to whether there's a possibility to potentially, when this all comes online and the redesign of 211 and 212 takes place, if there's a chance to also reroute the 42 through downtown Woodland, like, in both directions or potentially along, like, 3rd Street or one of those.
That's part of the whole idea around the downtown transit center, is so that we route the bus into that area where we have a trip generator. It increases the amount of people who have eyes on this area, but it also increases the amount of people getting used to the service and make it more facilitating to use the service. So I think what we're looking at is getting the transit center and the idea of where we can put it, and then looking at the routing to match up.
Oh, okay. It's the transit centers that need first before the more holistic redesign takes place.
But it's all kind of interlocked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we're not necessarily going to wait for full build out of the transit center to reroute the service, but we want to make sure we know where we're going to have the transfer center before we reroute the service.
Oh, okay. I see. Thank you.
I just want to add one thing, if I can, which is just to clarify, this is staff's initial recommendation, but all of this is going to have to go before the board, and all of this has budget implications. And so I just want to highlight that, you know, it's not a done deal. These are staff recommends it, right? Because it is going to cost more money. And so, support for the community in terms of increasing the hours of operation for fixed route service, having longer hours of operation for microtransit and migration decisions, your support will be helpful, I think, with the board in terms of understanding how important it is to move these forward. How was that right off the public pitch?
I'll just make one last comment, in redesigning this, I'll be in the same position as my fellow here, David, but if the redesign leaves Matt Morin, that is where my staff is. And I didn't say I bought my house because of that. It was a plus. So it'll be sad, but I'll be okay.
Thank you. I was going to appreciate this piece about that when the vehicle currently serving as branding is not in service, it being integrated, I like that detail. I appreciate that you found a way to add capacity, where it exists. From my writer experience in West Sacramento, when I earlier said that it is an imperfect alternative, it's because during time of surge, sometimes there could be the system immediately bogged down. And when that happens, after what I would consider long, significant delays, 15, 20 minutes, sometimes then you just need to alert that your ride is canceled. And this, I would say, is squarely an operator issue, not an agency issue. But being in the stages we're in, I wanted to pass that along because if I didn't have a bus alternative and I did rely on getting to my job in that scenario, I would have a very unhappy employer. And so that is something that I'm always considering with ideas. Like, it better be a pretty loose time I have to arrive if it's at all of the support there. And so I just wanted that consideration to be made for these things. I don't know how you get them to not drop rides at peak time, but
Andy can probably speak to this, but I think one of the key factors in choosing Ryan over Sophia was the ferry issue. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Ryan had more, because they had the capability of scheduling trips almost more faster and frequency. They really prioritized efficiently combining trips in a way where it almost kind of operates on. They had the capability of operating on frequencies more like fixed routes or if you look at where we go to book the trip and it gives you like trips in like 15-minute intervals or whatever. Well, via it was more like, and it probably was more similar like to the traditional ride hailing experience where it's like you book a trip but then it kind of made, but then it's like there's definitely, it seemed like there's more variability there.
Well, I think what probably was somebody booking a trip for two people and then inviting a third person to hop in or something like that. and that's just kind of an imperfect part of the adoption of this new kind of technology, or even this kind of middle point of adoption and perfection of it. But so I'm glad the consideration was made, because I think that's one of the biggest logistical challenges of the service.
I'll just say that you're going to get a trip that is 90 minutes from now, as opposed to just like cancel if your trip or thing is not available. And I think that's kind of like.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it.
That sounds very similar to the Apple Corridors, right?
Appreciate that, actually. I get my Apple Corridors when I bring up.
So I think you're hearing a lot of positive feedback. What I'm hearing also is that you may or may not have appetite for someone to consider a motion of support for some of these items, or is it early days, really?
Thank you for that. Okay, I believe it's an informational item, so I don't think it's an motion, but it's maybe more of a feature.
Yes. We'll be bringing back a full proposal to PAC in May, which will include, master access schedule. I just wanted to keep the committee informed of this and open up the window for communication if there's any ideas or any feedback that they get or that becomes available. I'd love to hear it in any format.
Okay.
So one last question on stairs.
You could direct to Karen's issue. Before you.
I know that Sacramento has a family fare service policy, right, where people can ride, but over a certain number of people is not extra cost. Okay, is that being considered here?
That is part of, like, the idea that these are multi-ride or multi-people. There's been a variety of different ones we've seen. SACRT has one, I think if you have five people ride, it's either free or it's part of the fare, instead of having to pay for all five.
Yeah.
Everybody does it a little differently on if it's per ride that's individual takes or per total number of people. So,
okay.
I think that's still up in the air to try to figure out how best to serve our community. A lot of people we talk to seem to be wanting to use it on kind of an individual basis, but I see a lot of families utilizing it to get around.
Yeah.
Those things are still asset comments. Are there any last comments from the president? And I'm going to make sure that you have it so far. Okay, sounds good. Okay, with that, we're going to move on to, so we're going to move on to a discussion of the draft zero emission bus rollout plan and the excellent.
So I was going to start off with so just a little background for what I'm going to be presenting. So this is just an information item regarding what is the zero emission bus plan, the purpose of it, and then the biggest, probably most important piece of this information, which is what is our timeline for conversion, which is what is our current fleet that we need to convert. And so, again, just this is an information item, so probably either at the next meeting or in April. So in May you'll have the full draft, and then you'll have it ahead of time, so be able to sink your teeth in and kind of go over all of the items that I have here in the information item. So with that, so just a quick background. So what this is Zero Emission Bus Plan Rollout. It was established in 2018 by the Air Resources Board. It's called the ITT regulation. It's required that every transit agency in the state has a plan to commit to converting their entire fleet to zero emissions. Now that can be battery electric, that can be fuel cell, a blend of either, but it is a requirement that each transit agency needs to make by 2040. And so with that, this plan essentially is explaining to the Air Resources Board how we intend to do that, what are the implications that go into this conversion process, what are issues that we foresee that we need to address in the long term. And then in addition to that, it also requires us to provide a range of estimates and figures related to how this conversion plan will, not necessarily the GHG reduction, but more so the estimated cost for purchasing the bus and kind of some financial hardships that we may face, sources of funding that we'll need to identify for this conversion. But really from an estimated point, this plan is flexible from the Air Resources Board, meaning we don't have to say 100% to this if things change, like, say, another pandemic, or if manufacturers are experiencing a backlog of purchase. So just keep that in mind. Next slide. So right now, this table is incredibly hard to see. I apologize. but if you look in your packet, what it goes over is our current fleet of buses that we offer to Gilliva. Why this is important is that you can tell our buses are at different stages of their useful life. We have different types of buses depending on the type of service we run. Even though they all say fixed service, I do want to make a note that for our MCI diesels that are a little bit larger, 45 feet, that's usually what we use to operate our cash-free service on 215. And so it's just something to keep in mind. This is our base number for what we have to deal with for our conversion plan. And so that's basically step one. How many buses do you have? What is your inventory for your fleet? And so let me go to the next slide. So this probably the most important part. How do we plan to get there? What is our timeline? And then how many buses do we plan to purchase along the way? So
what you see, which is also hard to see, I apologize, is the list of buses on the left. It will be easy to read from your packet. And the black cell that is highlighted is indicating the gear that we'll be purchasing, procuring buses. So our procurement schedule that we have currently is planned to start in 2026. This has allowed us to get about 3 years of lead time in regards to planning, so making sure that we have enough time to, on the workforce end, we're training our staff that are going to, maintenance operators that are need to be, to understand how to work on zero emission vehicles. This can allow us enough time to plan for our overhauling, our capital improvements. So facility upgrades. We're going to have to talk with PG&E to establish energy contracts. So this will allow us enough time to understand those unknowns and then begin, once we have that information, to actually make our procurement orders, in addition to deciding which manufacturer we end up purchasing our buses from. And so the green highlighted cell for 2036, that is our projected year that we will be 100% fully converted, or we will have procured 100% of our fleet. I do want to note that procurement doesn't mean the buses are arriving, so it could be a few years later. But in terms of the Air Resources Board, they require us to meet our goal by 2040. Current schedule has us meet it at 2036. So next slide. And so this is just an outline for the schedule of what's going to happen next between the plan being completed and then the timeline for when I'll need to present to you both again to our board. And then I'll have about a month of time to review comments from both you guys and the board before everything is finalized. And then we hope, but this will be finished in June, and we'll get a thumbs up approval from the CARB that the old bus has met their requirement for providing a zero emission bus. So yeah, this is just a brief outline of what to expect. But yeah, I definitely think that the next meeting will be much more robust. There's a lot of details to explain. That's it.
Thank you very much. Are there any clarifying questions before we ask the public comment?
Sorry, it's a question. Sorry, but what exactly constitutes zero emission? Which technologies qualify?
Yeah, so right now the Air Resources Board has a list of buses that qualify. Basically, it's easy to either be a fuel cell or battery electric buses, the main two buses that are classified as zero emission. So currently our fleet operates on CNG for our bus fixed service, so that is not considered a zero emission type of fuel. And I say that focusing on fuel cell or battery electric is ideally those are the two that in-house we're considering, but there's still a bit of research and we need to go to before kind of committing to what type that we intend to go to.
Any other clarifying questions?
One really quick thing. I know in your presentation you mentioned, you called out the MCI buses were operating on the 215. It's when it's been written down, is fixed service here. That's saying that, is there any plan, probably a little bit, not quite related to the rollout plan specifically, but just because of that comment, I was wondering, is there any plan to convert the 215 away from fixed route service?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to check.
Okay, with that, we're going to ask for comments from the public. Are there any members of the public who'd like to comment on this item? The subject is on board.
Thank you very much. This is very easy to do with the PTS 20 on 2036. This is great to work for media that's important. I think it's really important to keep publicizing the thing because we want greenhouse gas reduction. That's what we're doing this time. And we need to put that in context with the local city's cash, because that's the scaffolding of it. And so we should basically quantify the value, cost per addition, cost per greenhouse gas, how reduced, and just talk about the total benefit. I mean, no yellow bus does not have a cap per se, but you should contribute that. You should tell the local cities that they can add this to their cap in terms of the reduction of pipelines. This is very important. I looked this up real quickly, and yes, electric buses produce about one kilogram or 2.5 pounds per mile. Natural gas buses produce about 5 pounds per gallon per mile, and a diesel hybrid, which is about 2.5 of 2.4 pounds of greenhouse gases per mile. So the electric buses are about 2 and 3 times. I mean, they're about a third of what the other buses are. So this is a great, we should talk about those numbers. People could hang their head on that. And they put the context per capita, people know. People don't know the other stuff, they know that. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. Okay. I have questions from the old ICN and comments. So with that, I see the vice-chair from Canada is up. So, of course.
When the buses are retired, it becomes a system of possibility for the technology to convert them to electric or the, what becomes past month in some other country or what's the story?
We do have a number of ways of disposing of them. I would tell you that when it comes to end of useful life on our buses, it's really the end of the useful life here at Total Bus. We operate those buses in this ground. We operate a huge amount of miles, so we usually reach the end of our mileage useful life before we reach the years. And a lot of the buses that you see on our list are in the millions of miles, even though the useful life is 500,000. So we really use our buses to the very max. And I say that to just not think about that we'll be converting them to electric. There's a lot of components on those buses that aren't included in the drivetrain redo. And therefore, a lot of times they are used for other purposes. We've had a really, really great relationship with City of Woodland sister town in New Mexico. Blanking on the name. Thank you. And we have in the past gone ahead and worked with them to sell or we donate them. I want to say last time I think we got a whole 4 cents out of the 4 buses. But I have to look at the contract again. But they go and they use those vehicles for a variety of things. They aren't always for transportation. They had a book, a library ran out of one, which I thought was great. They could pick a park and use the structure as a way to get people in and out with getting that service. So there's a lot of different things that people have been real innovative with the bus structures. So there's a lot of maybe not so much recycling share, but definitely me.
Well, and then some of them just get pulled at auction, right?
And then some of them get pulled
at Burning Man. Burning
Man. Hopefully after they are low good shot.
Other comments or questions? Or input for the staff?
Thank you. So, a couple of questions. So, I know a few months ago pretty soon after the heat wave, we discussed some issues going on with the Causeway Connection, where I think there was like a bus that like turned out like during the heat, and like the electric bus couldn't handle it well, and it like took shut off on the Causeway. And so I think that just brings to light that I mean this still is, I mean as beneficial as zero emission buses are, they're still very much an emerging technology, and there definitely there's still challenges in how they're deployed with like their range and whatnot. And so I'm curious as this moves ahead, is there a plan? I know like Unitrans also has moved ahead like pretty aggressively with their zero emission rollout. But I think one thing I know that they've mentioned makes it a little easier for them is that a lot of their routes are shorter, just stop Rice and Davis. So are you all planning like just to start deploying them mainly on like some of the local like Woodland West Sacramento services? Or will they be like on longer routes like the 42 or 215 right away?
Yeah, so a good question. So part of the schedule, if you look at the planning, so currently we run, so the 138, we run it from Texas. So part of what we're doing now is getting that information to know how are we going to fully provide service with all our given routes. And right now we're not necessarily looking at Texas, but we're still using that information. The second part is we're not buying all the clusters at once. So allowing us to kind of use our current fleet of CNG, close useful life, and our zero emission buses allows us to account for maybe unknowns related to service that we continue to change over time, because it is an emerging technology. So to answer your question, we don't have a fully set in place it's going to work out as intended, but we have at least the resiliency with having a blended fleet. So if there are certain issues related to routes and weather that we don't foresee or have the experience to know, then we're protected with not having all of our eggs in one basket until we can get a better understanding of maybe from the manufacturers of what changes need to be made. In addition, we're also looking within this plan is that our capital improvements, so protecting our electric buses, that will be stored outside. So there's a lot of factors that we're still in the process of going through that we will take into account because of, like, that experience you said that we've had.
Just reminds me of these things. There are the known knowns, unknown.
Okay, sir. One more question. This is now on the rollout plan. So I know as Courtney knows, over the last year we've been at Caltrans, we did a lot of work on IIJA, developing the action plan for that. And one issue we heard a lot about from transit agencies, and just in terms of, and they wanted to help them strategize how to pay for these zero emission buses. And one thing that came up a lot was a desire to align the zero emission rollout plan with some of the federal programs, like the low and no emission program. And they require like a somewhat similar document, like to support those grant applications. So I'm curious as to what are your thoughts on, like, is this going to be able to be used for support, like, will this document be usable to support for federal applications, or will something else be needed?
Yes. I said real simply that this document is actually one of the reasons why many of the California transit agencies are getting funding for the LONO. If you look at the last 2 years of awards, California needs, and we're getting way more than our portion of that low no program, which is a federal program, the low and no emission bus program. And it's because CARB has required us to do this rollout plan. And so it's a requirement in that program, and all of our agencies are ahead of the rest of the nation.
Well, and I would just ask, except for us, because we are one of the last agencies to actually do this, and it's unfortunate that, you know, it wasn't, that we were not one of the first agencies to do this, because, like, we're not in a position right now to apply for, like, the current route of low note, for example, because we don't have this 10 fund. And so, you know, I think Courtney was handed this on day one. Not this done as soon as you can. So, you know, we're catching up. But, you know, so that's a downside, you know, we're behind some agencies like Unitrans, you know, we've got their plan about done sooner, because it is a requirement to have that plan done before you can apply for those funds. But on the flip side is that, you know, we get to also look at some of the states and, you know, hopefully have, you know, be getting some of the technology that's more advanced and less problematic.
I'll just say, too, another advantage for us is we have 44 buses, so our fleet size to convert is smaller than some of the other agencies. So given that we're a little bit behind, we have more flexibility with our schedule to meet the deadline and less total buses than some of the other agencies.
Thank you. Member Doxy.
I guess my question was about, you know, with respect to kind of, you know, think about getting that back in position. Also, you know, I know some of the, I'm curious if any of the vendor that left the microtransit was considering using any list fans. I know that VIA is using some of that scan service elsewhere in California. I don't know if
So just to let everybody know, there's a difference between how we're going to operate our service and VIA. We're actually going to operate our service in-house, and Brightco is just going to be a technology provider. They won't provide drivers, they won't provide vehicles, they won't provide any of that. So we will be making all of those kinds of decisions on who's driving and who is the vehicle to drive. Unfortunately, to get this rollout going, we were required to buy the vehicles that were available, and they are gas. However, part of this transition plan is not just doing the fixed route buses, but all of our vehicles, and so they will be included in getting to battery electric or fuel cell, whichever works best. So right now, I'll tell you, no, the Woodland service won't be battery electric or zero emission pump, but in the future we will definitely be pushing to do that.
Just to follow up on that, I do notice that that's not, I think, accounted for in your fleet number, so I'm assuming you'll be bringing something back to the meeting.
Yes, this was just going over our zero emission buses. We do have, the plan will include a comprehensive list of our entire fleet, and as well as kind of the financial figures and like how we plan to do that conversion. But just for the information I have today, just focusing on the bus portion.
A quick question. With the fuel cell, is there like any concern? I mean, is it like a, how do you replenish a fuel cell?
It's replenished a lot like an RCG. It's not instant, but it's a fuel that gets pumped into it.
Not out.
Correct. However, some of the charging is, can get down to minutes.
Well, and the reason I'm not asking about that is because you said battery electric. Taking them here. So, I guess, is there like any concern about downtime or, I guess, different accessories, reducing reliability or anything like that?
Yeah, so I guess in terms of downsides for like hydrogen fuel cell, compared to battery, let's start battery electric. So we know that with battery electric, the plastic goes down to timing, so how long it takes to charge, and then the implications of the energy required depending on the terrain of service you're providing. So with that, usually battery electric works well on shuttles and shorter distances, local routes. However, with our service with YOLO, we could fix that issue with having charging that is on our selected routes that we choose. So it doesn't necessarily require us to always have our buses come back into the main station to charge. They can do that on their routes as well. With hydrogen, I believe some of the issues really, I can't speak on them as much in terms of, I may get a better energy output, but I can't speak on like worse.
The worst part about it is the infrastructure cost associated with it. The higher capital upfront cost. You get a close to the same range to get on CNG, but it's a different kind of maintenance. So there's usually improvements that need to happen to your maintenance facility, a higher cost for fuel per mile.
And if I'm correct, there's also a less supply chain opportunity for delivery as well.
Correct, unless you're doing it on site and creating your
own. Hydrogen is extremely flammable and dangerous, and so that's why it's it just means that everything's more expensive around it. The delivery schedule, the fueling infrastructure, everything has to be, the reason they call them hydrogen bombs, right?
I guess the nature of my question usually is like, does it affect reliability, or does it affect the cost? So does the increased cost of fuel get passed on to the rider, or how does that work out? And then the fueling and how, so obviously the plan that has, are we going to ensure that nothing gets lost to the rider and how?
That is the hope of the plan, that we create something that a plan that allows us to go forward without having an effect on the rider, and that we aren't picking a fuel type
forward
that, have
growth back on. Okay, and then just really quickly, for refueling with the hydrogen, is that going to happen in Muskrat at the Long River Road or anything?
Yeah, I would figure that whatever fueling we would have to have in the facility, somewhere close to our park to do that kind of stuff. But I mean, after getting probably to use the one that's out in the bus after, we'd want that to be our backup, not our just because of the last block travel back and forth.
Right.
Well, it's been early days and things that you're going to be sort of doing. I think I see coming up on the
Zoom too. Is the Iron Woman coming on the I had a colleague who had an electric car, and there's a lot of queues there. So I don't think that, you know, it would be feasible to use the public one because there's sort of there's like only a couple hydrant fueling stations in the whole Sacramento region, and they tend to be queues. So I think that would be complicated. So that's another consideration when you're looking at the difference between the two. I don't have a, you know.
Nobody else has their hands on the other hypercar. Going back to something that I had thought and then brought up on the electric buses, I am really wondering when you're going through your variables that you're looking at equipment resilience and climate adaptation over time on some of your options, both in the short term and the long term. And then I noticed that you have, that your first buses that you want to replace are 6 in 2026, and I'm wondering if those are your electric buses or if it's climate pressure over a combination of older people.
Yeah, no, so that's just some of our older CNG buses. It's not the preparers. We still have, I believe those only have 50,000 miles, so we plan to, as I said, get our full use out of those buses. It's just, I guess, noted for the future meetings, I'll kind of say which types of buses that we're planning to replace. We like that level of information detail too. But yes, to answer your question, we're not 6 preparers.
Great. So yeah, I definitely think making sure that you're calling out adaptation and resilience and your options would be super helpful. But I also noticed that on your schedule you write the board, but I also know you run the CAC in May, so you might have that picture.
I think that the CAC is the week before the board. So
I thought I'd do that for May.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On the point about adaptation, one of the things we are looking at is trying to make sure that we are buying whatever form of vehicles we're buying that are zero emission, during any natural disaster, to make sure to be there for our community. So, as we've talked about battery electric, we've talked about having some kind of backup power available to us so that we can continue to come on. So I know that has been part of the discussion that we've had on the zero emission buses, is to make sure we have that adaptation that you're talking about. It's very much part of our
business. Appreciate that. And I just think there's a big lesson to learn, as some of the girls said, from the Proterra buses, and making sure that it was kind of adapted. Other comments or questions from members? Super excited about the zero emission bucket. And glad to see that the transit folks are taking this on. And I do agree that even though you may be coming a little later in the game, there is actually opportunity to be problems and take some lessons to be far over time. And so I'm excited to see that come up there. I appreciate that. Now, I just want to ask that if you have any input on the CDC or where to move forward, any transition.
I think at this time I really appreciate your questions just regarding the types of energy and our reasoning for choosing that, and then also just bring up your experiences with some of the shortfalls of zero emission buses. So at this time, yeah, I'm working through this, but I appreciate like kind of Erickson's all comments. So if you don't have my information, I'll make sure you get it. No ignore me, but if you have any other questions, go ahead.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. I don't see anything else on the agenda. I do have a request for a staff for future agendas. It would be very nice to not have to just hit the adjournment button, but give members the opportunity for any kind of comments. So if we could add a member section prior to adjournment, that would be awesome.
Probably. And I'm like, it was working before.